The German Lieutenant by August Strindberg. Narrated by Paul Sperra. Chapter 1. It was 14 days after Sedan, in the middle of September 1870. A former clerk in the Prussian Geological Survey, later a lieutenant in the reserve, named von Bleichroden, sat in his shirt sleeves before a writing table in the Café du Cercle, the best inn of the little town of Marlotte. He had thrown his military coat with its stiff collar over the back of a chair, and there it hung limp and collapsed like a corpse, with its empty arms seeming to clutch at the legs of the chair to keep itself from falling headlong. Round the body of the coat, one saw the mark of the sword belt, and the left coat tail was rubbed quite smooth by the sheath. The back of the coat was as dusty as a high road, and the lieutenant geologist might have studied the tertiary deposits of the district on the edges of his much-worn trousers. When the orderlies came into the room with their dirty boots, he could tell by the traces they left on the floor whether they had been walking over Eocene or Pliocene formations. He was really more a geologist than a soldier, but for the present he was a letter writer. He had pushed his spectacles up to his forehead, sat with his pen at rest, and looked out of the window. The garden lay in all its autumn glory before him, and the branches of the apple and pear trees bent with the load of the most splendid fruit to the ground. Orange-red pumpkins sunned themselves close beside prickly gray-green artichokes, fiery-red tomatoes clambered up sticks near wool-white cauliflowers, sunflowers, as large as a plate, were turning their yellow discs toward the west, where the sun was beginning to sink. Whole companies of dahlias, white as fresh-starched linen, purple-red like congealed blood, dirty red, like fresh-slaughtered flesh, salmon-red, sulfur-yellow, flax-colored, mottled and speckled, sang one great flower concert. Then there was the sand-strewn path, lined by two rows of giant gillyflowers, faintly lilac-colored, dazzlingly ice-blue, and straw-yellow. They continued the perspective to where the vineyards stood, in their brownish-green array, a small wood of thyrsus staves, with the reddened grape clusters half hidden under the leaves. Behind them were the whitening, unharvested stalks of the cornfields, with the overripe ears of corn hanging sorrowfully towards the ground. With wide-open husks and bracklets at every gust of wind paying their tribute to the earth and bursting with their juices. And far in the background were the oak treetops and the beechen arches of the forest of Fontainebleau, whose outlines melted away into the finest denticulations like old Brussels lace, into the extreme meshes of which the horizontal rays of the evening sun wove gold threads. Some bees were still visiting the splendid honey flowers in the garden. A robin redbreast twittered in an apple tree. Strong gusts of scent came now and then from the gillyflowers, as when one walks along a pavement and the door of a scent shop is opened. The lieutenant sat with his pen at rest, visibly entranced by the beautiful scene. "What a lovely land," he thought. And his recollection went back to the sandy plain of his home, diversified by some wretched stunted firs which stretched their gnarled arms toward the sky, as though they implored the favor of not having to drown in the sand. But the beautiful landscape which was framed in the window was shadowed as regularly as clockwork by the musket of the sentry, whose bright, shining bayonet bisected the picture, and who turned on his rounds exactly under a pear tree heavily laden with the finest yellow-green Napoleon pears. The lieutenant thought for a moment of asking him to choose another beat, but did not venture to do so. So, in order to escape the flash of the bayonet, he let his gaze wander to the left over the courtyard. There stood the cookhouse with its yellow-plastered wall, and an old knotty vine spread out against it, like the skeleton of some animal in a museum. The vine was without leaves or clusters, and it stood there as though crucified, nailed fast to the decaying espalier, stretching out its long, tough arms and fingers as though it wished to draw the center.